There are a handful of Zen Founder episodes that I hear people recommending. I see them recommending online, or I overhear someone talking about it at a conference. And, you know, when someone says, which episode should I listen to? You know, like I said, there's this handful that I hear over and over. And one of them was part of our first founder origin stories. It was episode 25, and it was the interview with Ruben Gomez. Sherry interviewed Ruben about his past growing up, and, you know, how he had basically cheated death as friends of his were killed running drugs and being involved in gangs. And Ruben touches on how a couple folks along his journey really steered him in a different direction as he moved from a day laborer to someone who learned how to fix computers and do help desk, to someone who learned how to code, to someone who was managing coders, to someone who was managing people who managed coders, to eventually launching his own software product, BidSketch, and achieving, you know, quite a substantial level of success with that. If you haven't heard this interview, it's really amazing stuff. It's one of my favorite Zen Founder episodes. And if you have heard it, you probably haven't heard it in a while. So we're going to revisit that this week. I hope you enjoy it.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
First of all, just describe how you were as a child. What was your personality or character like?
As a child, I guess I'd say that I've always been very quiet. One thing I remember people saying throughout my early childhood was just that I never talk. He never talks. He never talks. Does he ever say anything? So I must have been pretty quiet. I like to play by myself, to spend time by myself and just sort of use my own imagination. I'd play with my brothers. I had two younger brothers. I was very comfortable with just spending a lot of time alone.
Did you have a lot going on in your head? I mean, it sounds like you had a pretty active imagination and that kept you company.
I guess so. It's just very easy for me to sort of entertain myself and just use anything to create a world and just go into it, right? We didn't have a lot of money, so we didn't have toys and, you know, we didn't have a lot of stuff. So it was often just about finding whatever we had around and just using that to have fun.
Would you say a little bit about your family? You mentioned you had two younger brothers.
Yeah, two younger brothers were 2 years apart. So the youngest is 4 years younger than me. My mother, she was about 21, 22 when she had me. My father was, I think he was like 18 when he had me. So he was younger. He was pretty young. That was in New York. My mother's very caring person, gave us a lot of freedom, very loving, and anything that her children were everything to her, right? She always put us first. She's a very strong woman as well. Our father, he was just very strict, extremely strict. It was like living in a military household, though he wasn't military. So my father was from Mexico, and he came to the United States, to New York, when he was in his teens. My mother also did the same, but she was from the Dominican Republic. And that's where they met. They basically came from other countries. I was not raised American. So even to this day, there's just a lot of stuff that people bring up. Remember this or that from, you know, their childhood. And I have no idea what they're talking about. I spoke Spanish for the first few years of my life. And I didn't start to learn English until maybe 10 or so. Even though I started to go to U.S. schools, I was going to just classes that were all in Spanish. And when we moved to California, maybe around, you know, 6, 7 or somewhere there, we spent a couple years there, then moved to Mexico. In Mexico, we had family there. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with like grandmother, uncles, and other relatives like that. And yeah, while we lived there, I do remember talking about Americans and not thinking of myself as an American. Like, I didn't realize that. And I remember starting to learn English and kind of showing off, because, you know, it was a good thing. If you're learning English, you're considered smart, right?
It's a really interesting perspective to be growing up in the U.S., but not growing up as an American. What made it feel so different? Like, what set your childhood apart from an American childhood, so to speak?
It didn't feel different to me. It didn't, you know, it was just normal, right? So it wasn't until later, till I started getting older, that, well, first I had to sort of consider myself an American and realize that I am an American. And that had just happened over time and kind of felt natural eventually. Then, yeah, as I just got older, there were just always hints of things that people would say, shows that they'd watch or traditions that they'd have or things that they do. And I just couldn't relate to that because I grew up differently.
And it sounds like you had two very different parents, like a very loving, affirming mother who gave you a lot of freedom, and then a very, very strict father. So what was your relationship like with each of them?
It was great with my mother. It was not so good with my father. We were basically afraid of our father. They got divorced. They got divorced maybe when we were about 12 or so. He definitely was the one that disciplined us. And whenever we'd get in trouble, if we did something really bad, our mother would say, "Wait till your father gets home," that sort of thing. But also, sometimes if we did things that were, you know, that kids do sometimes, she would keep it from him because she knew that it wouldn't be a good thing to tell him. It didn't make sense in those situations. So I remember at one point, I don't remember what age I was, but I was probably somewhere around 10 or so, maybe younger, talking to my mother and telling her to leave him, to leave my father. I really, really didn't want him around.
That's a big conversation for a 10-year-old.
Yeah, well, to me, it just seemed very clear. He, in my mind at that point, he was just bad, right? He just was not just way too tough on us, but he hit us and not punched us, but his belt out and really, really go to town sometimes. So
was there an element of wanting to protect your mom from him?
Yeah, that was the big thing for me at that point, too, was that I didn't like the way that he treated her, right? Kind of typical in like Mexican culture, or at least older style, was that he was the man of the house and that she had to do everything that he says. And, you know, so he just really didn't treat her well. And I very much didn't like that when I was a kid. Never liked that ever.
So you grew up in some ways with a lot of autonomy and freedom and a lot going on in your head, but also it sounds like some fear and some maybe need to be on guard or even more mature than your years as you're thinking about protecting your mom.
I definitely was a kid at times, but I did spend a lot of time just worried about things.
A seriousness to life.
Right, right.
Did you have any early interest in business or in technology as you were kind of in those elementary school, middle school years?
I always say that I didn't, that I don't. And I didn't during those years. I don't think I did. Basically, we just grew up poor and no one in our families, no one that we knew had a business, right? Like everybody had jobs and they had very low paying jobs. It wasn't a model that sort of existed. And we knew of people that did that through television or something like that, but that was a different world, right? Like, I'm not sure exactly how I thought of it back then, but maybe something like you kind of have to grow up in an environment where that's a possibility, or that just doesn't exist for, right? For most people, maybe is how I thought of it. So the only thing that I could remember way back was we were asked to draw what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I remember drawing, it was not specific to any job or like any function. It was just, my drawing just had a lot of dollar bills, like a lot of dollar signs around it. It was like I wanted to be rich. That's what I wanted to be when I grew up.
So you knew at that point that you wanted to do something that would get you a lot of money, a lot of security.
Right. I definitely knew that money was a good thing and I wanted it. I didn't know. I had no idea how you would do that.
So as you moved into high school, you moved back to the U.S. from Mexico. Where were you living during high school? Or
Happened during like junior high, but I actually didn't go to high school. So I forget the grades now. It's been so long. But basically, before starting high school, I was just really getting into a lot of trouble. Never in school, just getting kicked out of one school after the other, after, you know, just all over the place. And eventually they tried to send me to adult school as a last resort, but then I got kicked out of there. So I was out. I didn't have anywhere to go and I had to get a GED. Up until that point, up until like a year before then, I'd been a really good student. I'd skipped grades. I was really great in school. And then there just came a point where I just started meeting certain people. And for the first time in my life, because I was always super geeky and never did anything wrong or tried, didn't do too many things wrong as a kid. And I sort of just spent a lot of time exploring and doing bad stuff.
So you went from this kind of quiet, independent, smart, geeky kid to someone who's running with a wilder crowd or a crowd that's more dangerous.
Yeah. And it wasn't much of a crowd because I was still very quiet. I was just drinking a lot and going to school drunk and, you know, just doing all sorts of stuff.
Were you angry?
No, I wasn't angry.
Was it more kind of boredom and curiosity? Like, what do you think was motivating that change in you?
Because I was raised to just be so quiet, and I was raised a certain way by my father. I never did much of anything. And I remember at one point, me and my brothers were hidden in our room. For the first time, we were listening to music that had bad words. You know, I think it was NWA or something. We were playing it and we were just laughing at the bad words that they were saying. So it was kind of about exploring and seeing how far I could push things and just doing things I'd never done or, you know.
There's all this chaos happening around you, and maybe it didn't feel chaotic to you. Maybe it felt interesting or you were pushing the envelope. But were you at all concerned about not finishing school or not going to high school, or was that fine with you at that time?
Yeah, that was fine with me. So my mother was really concerned, obviously. And she would say things like, you're going to end up flipping burgers and whatever, right? So school was kind of slow for me at one point. So there was a lot of boredom there too. And I felt like, I think it was, you know, around 13 or 14, I was studying on my own college material. So, and then I'd go to school and everything, you know, kids were just really slow. The questions they were asking were, it's nothing about it was interesting. So I felt like, kind of feel like I didn't need to go, which was a dumb thing to feel like because I didn't even know what it was, right? What I was missing. But I felt like that was part of it. And I don't know. I mean, I was just in a totally different mindset back then.
It wasn't interesting. You didn't want to go. You were ready to.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it would ever be a problem. People would always say that it's super important for you to, you know, get good grades at this stage and, you know, it's going to affect the rest of your life and all that. I didn't feel like that was relevant because the types of jobs or work that people like me got, it really didn't matter. And like, there wasn't anybody that ever really went to college, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like something that I was going to do because I couldn't afford it.
So you thought, why go to high school if I'm not going to go further in this?
And well, I didn't think, I actually thought that I was just going to continue doing all the bad stuff that I was going doing all through high school. I didn't expect to just like ever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be completely kicked out, but that just happened. And when it did, I just wasn't very concerned with it. There's a conversation that I had with my mother around that time where she was really concerned. And she tells me that I told her that not to worry, that one way or another, I'm going to make a lot of money. But she said that it really freaked her out because of the way that I said it. She felt like I was talking about illegally, right? Make a lot of money. So that it wasn't very relevant. And at the time I did fall into, or I started basically just doing a bunch of illegal stuff, running cars, running guns to Mexico and stuff like that. So I was also making money that way.
So you were beginning to make money.
Yeah, I was starting to make money, but it was a different type of money. Right.
And how did you transition? Like, was there a big aha moment where you realized I don't want this life anymore, or did it change slowly?
It sort of changed. Like, I guess I had that thought in the back of my mind. I felt like it was something that I probably couldn't do for a very long time. Grew up in a really bad neighborhood, lots of gangs, people, you know, get shot regularly. I was shot at several times. So I had friends die. And after a certain number of friends, like the third or fourth friend died, that sort of just made me realize that I just couldn't continue doing this. Things were just getting really bad at one point. I remember thinking, okay, this is not going to work.
I need another strategy.
I need to get a regular job. What do I do? What do I do now? Right? Because by then, you know, I was out on my own by like 15, but by then I think I was around 17. So I did that for a couple of years. And I needed to get a job. I didn't know how to just get a regular job or what type of job I did. I remember walking around, going to like little convenience stores and asking if they were hiring, right? And I ended up working construction. Mexicans were working there. None of them were citizens. I was the only citizen. So I drove the construction truck. I think they were paying like $6 an hour cash. And then you went at the end of every week and waited in the line to get paid. And sometimes they'd show up. Sometimes they wouldn't. And you would just leave. When they paid, usually it wasn't all of the money. They'd say, okay, this is all we have. You'll get more, you know, next week or in a couple of weeks. I don't remember how frequently it was. But I did that for about a year and a half. And it obviously was really hard and it sucked. And it was the first time that I learned what real work was, especially with the workers there. They worked hard. They hustled. That's where I really learned how to work. And I learned that things can be a lot harder.
Yeah, that kind of work and that kind of life is very hard.
Right.
Especially over time. How did technology happen for you?
So at one point, I was talking to my mother and brothers had moved to Florida. And I was talking to my brothers and they were saying that it's easy over there. It's easy to get jobs over there. So I decided to move to Florida to get a different type of work. So I moved there. I got some work. Ended up working at a hospital delivering linens. It was like $6 an hour, same sort of deal. Then I started to think, okay, how do I get out of this? Going down this track, I'm just basically going to just get job after job at like $6, $7, $8 an hour. So I thought, I think I need to go to college. That's how you get out of it. That's the way it works, right? So I decided, well, it's going to be hard to do that while I work this type of job. So I got a job working security because I figured at night, I figured that the job where I really didn't do much, I could probably do homework and study and then go to school full time. So I ended up getting a security job. And I remember after a few months, I was trying to figure out what to go to school for. And I was doing security at American Express. I was talking to a programmer there. He was from Colombia. And at one point he asked me, so what are you going to do? And I was just telling him about that I was thinking about going to school. I was thinking about going to college, but I wasn't sure what to go study. And he was like most programmers that would have that conversation. He was just excited.
He was an evangelist.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So, you should do programming. And to me, it was just a ridiculous thing. Like, the amount of knowledge that I thought I'd need was crazy. But then he pulled out a check from his shirt pocket And it was, I don't remember how many thousands it was, but it was a lot of money. It was the most I've seen in a check like that.
You saw your big dollar signs, right?
There. Yeah, yeah. And he said, this is my paycheck. You really need to do this. And I thought, oh, okay. That's really interesting. I need to check into it. And that's basically how I eventually signed up to go to this really shady sort of business school that offered a computer programming course, like associate, supposedly accredited, who knows. And I did. And I went to that. And eventually, after a year of that, I met a neighbor who got me a job doing tech support. And I dropped out and just did that because I, the tech support job was something like $12 an hour or $14 an hour. And I thought, wow, this is good money. This is all I need. Goodbye. I'm done. Not the end result, but kind of like it was definitely the most amount of money that I'd ever made. And I didn't really know people that were making that much money. So it was good money back then. So that's sort of why I dropped out.
Because it was good enough.
Yeah,
at the time. It was double what you were making before. So
oh, absolutely.
It was a good deal.
A lot of money. I didn't know where I was going to go after that, but you know, it was a good starting point. Also, when I started school for computer programming, I didn't own a computer. I'd never used a computer or turned one on. So I remember my biggest fear was just the first day that I'd go into class and they'd ask us to turn the computer on. And that I'd just be standing there trying to, you know, figure it out.
How did you handle that moment? I assume at some point they asked you to turn a computer on.
Well, no, they. I walked in, they were all on.
They were already on.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And I remember being super relieved. For the first few months, I just basically studied. I had a book. I think C++ was the very first language, I wouldn't recommend. And I basically just used pencil and notepad to sort of work through programs. And I did that for a few months. And then I tried them out in class for the first time. And they, of course, wouldn't work and be like, oh, man, this should totally work.
So you would do all of it on pencil and paper at home between classes and then try it in class?
Yeah, it was really tough, even because I didn't know anything about computer, so I had to learn a lot of abstract concepts. And it was really hard in the beginning to just sort of visualize what they were talking about in the book, right? And how programs work and what a variable means and what a loop is and, you know.
Yeah, that's a tremendous amount of abstract reasoning and knowledge that would have been super new.
All of it was new. It was really hard, but eventually I started to sort of get it and catch on and, you know, it stuck. And eventually I got a laptop. I got a laptop, not 100% legal way.
You don't have to tell that story.
Yeah, but that was super helpful. Once I did, then I was just able to spend a lot.
You could do your work.
Yeah, yeah. That was after a few months.
I mean, in some ways, Ruben, your story is like, please don't let my kids hear it. Because you did everything wrong, so to speak, but it has worked out so well for you and who you are now.
Yeah.
And in a way, you were right about all of it, right? You did do fine without going to high school. And
right.
You didn't need to go through all of the same hoops and things that other people did.
I didn't, but...
Do you wish you had done some things differently now that you're at this point in your life?
Oh, yeah. I wish I'd done a lot of things differently. But at the same time, all the things that I did, all my experiences make me who I am, right?
Sorry, you don't want to undo all of that, but...
So I kind of like it, but I think just going through that path, the biggest problem was that it took me a long time to think about entrepreneurship, right, as a thing that I could do. Right. Because I went from just doing a bunch of illegal stuff and
which so is sort of entrepreneurial, really.
Right. Right. Which kind of is.
It's kind of the beginning.
But I didn't really directly map it to right. So the way that I was kind of thinking about it was like, OK, well, now I have to follow the rules. Right. That all took place under the context of like breaking the law, not following the rules. Right. So when I switched to not breaking the law, then I had to think about like, okay, now I'm going to follow the rules. But But there's this middle ground to where you're not following the rules. You're not going to school, getting a job and working, climbing the corporate ladder, doing all of that stuff, right? Where you're just creating your own path, right? You're creating things and while still not breaking the law, right?
Right. You're still very creative, but within maybe a narrower margin. Like,
right.
Not all opportunities are fully available, but there's still a way in which you're off the well-worn path of right. other people's expectations.
Right. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So I'm sure I could have figured it out earlier. I think a big help for me was just seeing the possibility. And I didn't see that as a possibility until later. When you grew up that way, things are just not attainable when you never see the model for it, right? When you don't have any real world examples for it, then it's just not something that you ever think you can do.
It wasn't until some programmer showed you his check that you had an example of what could be done.
Right, right. And same thing with like computers. When I got into tech support, I met somebody that created their own website. And I remember asking him, oh, cool, this is your website? And he said, yeah. And he said that he made it. I was blown away. It's like, wow, this guy made his own website. And then he started showing me some stuff and he directed me to this website that had tutorials on like web languages. And that's how I got into programming, right? And I just spent like a year teaching myself all this stuff.
Do you think either of those guys know how important those like little actions were to you?
The programmer in that American Express building, definitely not, because I only talked to him a couple of times. The other person, yes, he's still a good friend. We talk nowadays. So we've talked about it. And he's actually doing something totally different now, not computers. But yes, it's kind of funny. It's these key people or relationships at certain points that just helped me along, helped me see what was possible.
Yeah.
Made me feel like, oh, this is something that I can actually do myself as well.
Were there other key people that really encouraged your entrepreneurial life?
So I think Rob was one of them. I know he was. So by that point, I'd gotten a job working for a big payroll company. I was managing team developers and managing managers and stuff like that.
You were living the programmer dream.
Yeah, sort of. But I'd gotten promoted, so I was management now, and I really didn't like what I was doing at all. I remember having thoughts of like, maybe I can build something and I could sell it, because we were buying software that wasn't that complicated, or a programmer feels like other software is not that complicated and they can build it. But I thought, wow, if these people are building this and selling it and making money, I could probably do that. So I kind of had those thoughts and I toyed around with building some stuff, but I never really launched anything and I wasn't serious about it. There were a couple like key books that made me think differently about it. And then I remember reading Rob's blog. That was really key, because it made it a lot more approachable, right? Like he had a lot of little businesses that that he was doing at the same time. He was buying some of them. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is actually something that I could do, right? And so that was another one.
So there are, yeah, these string of people who let you know what was possible. How do you think your early life continues to shape who you are now? I mean, now that you're running BidSketch and you've got employees and kids and all this stuff going on in your life, what traces of your early life are still really with you?
I think nowadays I'm a lot more comfortable coloring outside the lines and sort of pushing things and being aggressive in some ways, right?
So you've kind of reignited some of what was in you when you were 15, 16, 17, but in a more adaptive, healthier way.
Yeah, a lot more productive, yeah.
less guns involved.
Right, and that's always a good thing. I guess that's the biggest thing about it. Also, when bad things happen, bad things always happen, and things are always hard and things take longer than you want them to. And I see a lot of people get discouraged and talk about how hard things are, but it never really feels all that hard to me. Like, relatively speaking, sure, it's harder than working tech support or something like that. But it's not really hard. It's unbelievably, like, I've never worked so little and made so much money in my life, right? I've worked really, really hard and made nothing. I've done some really hard things for a long period of time.
So it sounds like all of your work is kind of saturated in the sense of gratitude, knowing that it could be very, very, very much harder than it is.
I'd say that's a really big element to it. It's very much that it can be a lot harder, but also I don't get discouraged that easily. And it's easier for me to stay focused. I'm very impatient. So I'm still very impatient, but I can keep working at something and attack from different angles for a long period of time if needed.
So there's a perseverance to you that you've practiced over all of this time and all of these different phases of your life.
I think that was one of the biggest things that I got from just my teen years and from doing all that stuff.
The kinds of experiences that you had as a young man, from where I sit as a mental health person, like, really could have destroyed you, frankly. And why do you think they didn't? Why do you think being shot at, having your friends die, getting in all of this illegal stuff, what made it so that you were able to bounce back from that and still have a drive and still have a sense of morality and relationship? And why do you think it didn't ruin who you were?
I don't know exactly. So I think if I was raised differently and then put in that situation, it would be really hard. But growing up in that sort of environment, it was just a reality and just the way that it was. You know what I mean? It was stressful and hard, and you know, like having to go through it or seeing people die or anything like that, but it was a reality in that environment.
So it wasn't necessarily traumatizing for you because it was kind of in line with what you expected from life.
Right.
What was normal to you.
Right. At that point. So if I grew up the way that my son is growing up now, and then later on, that would be a totally different situation.
How does that your mom is just stoked at how you have turned your life around, or just how you have grown as a person? What's your relationship with her like now?
It's great. She's pretty happy. You know, it was always really good, even when I was being a very bad kid. It was still good. She was just always trying to get me to not do bad things. It was always pretty good. And nowadays, it's great. We talk all the time. She's happy.
Well, anything else that feels important to mention or talk about in terms of how you got here?
One thing that I thought about was just that my brothers were also in the same sort of environment, but they didn't do nearly all the bad stuff that I did. So there was definitely a different way of getting out of there, right?
It's so notable to me how much raw intelligence is in you, you know, that you are skipping grades and really sounds like a very, very smart young man, and obviously continue to be very smart. But like, where was your brain when you were kind of in your teens? Did you still have that kind of rich imagination in your head? Were you thinking deep thoughts, or was that part of you kind of shut down?
There was. I'd go to the library and just check out a bunch of books and read about all sorts of different topics, architecture, and just like try to learn as much as possible. And it was really weird. I'd go out in the day and or at night and just do a bunch of bad stuff, and then I'd go home and just read. That's all I would do.
Read about Frank Lloyd Wright and...
Yeah.
Renaissance art. Wow.
You know, I don't really know where the part of me came. So, for example, when I was really young, before I started going to school, I remember teaching myself to write cursive. Nobody told me to do it or taught me or anything. I would just ask my mother to write stuff, and then I'd like, trace it and practice letters and all that stuff. I don't know where that came from.
Well, there's a real kind of innate curiosity and desire to learn, it sounds like.
There's also this like it just impatience with wanting to know and learn more. And I remember at an early age trying to study some stuff that I couldn't understand. And I remember being so frustrated that my brain wasn't able to, you know, it was just too abstract and I couldn't get it. It was really frustrating. I remember thinking, I think I'm too young for this. I don't remember what it was.
And that kind of made you mad.
Yeah, that made me very mad.
So I see how that impatience would fuel both your disdain for school eventually and your success with BidSketch. Yeah. Just get there now.
Right.
Well, very cool. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks.
Yeah. You
Thanks
have such
for inviting
an
me
interesting
this.
Story.
So nowadays, I just think about, well, what am I going to do with my son? Especially when the topic comes up of like going to school. I think...
Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about that. What I'll try to do is just try to encourage what I see in him, what he's just excited about. And initially, I used to say, no, I'm going to discourage him from going, like, spending $100,000 or whatever ridiculous amount of money is needed nowadays to get a degree. But if that's just something that he really wants to do, I'll support him in that. But at the same time, I will show him. I think it's super important to show people what the possibilities are, right? What the options are.
It's a big lesson from your life story.
Right. For me, yeah. For me, it's
very important.
Helping
him to see that range of choices and then helping him to choose for himself based on who he is.
Right.
Well, he's lucky to have you for a dad. I'm sure you'll have some interesting conversations with him as he gets curious about you and your story, too.
That'll be interesting.
Well, we'll put the like a parent advisory warning on this podcast.
Yeah.
None of our kids find it and say, Mom, Ruben didn't go to school. I don't have to.
See? Cool.
All right, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.